Hi everyone, we've got another interview, but this time on sponsorship. Now this is going to be with Brian Sims, one of the gurus for motorsport sponsorship, and he's been finding sponsorship for over 45 years now. So he's going to teach us some things that we really need to know. If you're a driver out there looking for sponsorship, you're going to love this. Now, just a disclaimer, sorry about the camera quality. If you're watching this on YouTube, it's not what it should be, but this is Zoom. We're in COVID time. We have to make do. So hopefully you look through that and just take on all the advice that we say here, that we talk about. And I just know you're going to love it. Ain't afraid to bear my soul. Ain't afraid to walk on coals. I ain't going to tell no lies. I ain't going to apologize. Can't stop. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the Race Driver Coach Show. It's great to have you. Obviously, we've got lots of drivers watching this or listening to the podcast that are trying to find sponsorship in a difficult time, which we can talk about later. But I want to get as many experts on this show as I can. And last week, we had a fitness expert saying how he trains F1 drivers and everything. But I think it's about time we turned our eye to sponsorship. And because I've known you for a long time, and I've from afar actually, and I've seen the great things you do, and I want you to basically talk to our community and hopefully give them some advice of how they can find sponsorship.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure. First of all, thank you for inviting me on. And there couldn't be a better time to be talking about sponsorship with what's going on in the business world right now.
Exactly. And just a few minutes, just let us know your story. Tell everybody who you are and what you did.
Okay. Well, you can see, I've been around the motor racing industry a long time. And first lesson is it shows. If you've been in this industry a long time, you look old.
You're only 25, right?
That's right. It's tough. I started motor racing actually very late, Enzo, because I just didn't have the money. But I was fortunate. When I left school, I went out into the business world as a trainee salesman. And I ended up as a Xerox salesman selling photocopiers through the streets of Canterbury and so forth. And I learned a lot about selling. And basically, my career has been built on the ability to acquire sponsorship. Okay. And I applied the skills that I learned in the business world to the world of motor racing. And hey, what? Guess what? It worked. Yeah. And before I'd ever raced, I was able to start my first race when I decided to participate. Fully sponsored. And from there on, right through my career, which has lasted 45 years, a lot of that time as a driver, but I've been able to get sponsorship. And it probably tells us something, and that is that I must be doing a few things right. And if today we can pass on some of those tips and help and advice to young people, and it's tough out there. It make no bones about it. It's one of the toughest times I've known for sponsorship.
Yeah, of course. It's even worse than 2008, right?
A lot worse. Yes.
Yeah, this is
the big problem you've got out there right now is the lack of ability to try to communicate. Companies have closed the doors down. Their staff are working from home.
Yeah.
And to try and get in to see them is a major challenge. And of course, if you can't do that, nothing else matters. It's very difficult.
That's it. That's right. So your career kind of spans as a driver. So I want to know two things. First of all, how did you get sponsorship when you were starting? So that'll take care of a lot of drivers watching this. And then on the other side, when you started to get a reputation, started to become a good driver, how did you get sponsorship in them days? And that's basically two phases of your life. And then actually after that, when you started to get sponsorship for F1 teams. So there's quite a bit to talk about. But yeah, just starting as a young you, talk us through that.
Well, when I first started, Formula Ford was the formula to be in as a junior.
Yeah.
We used to get entries of about 120, 130 Formula Fords per race meeting. Quite extraordinary. And therein lies a story, which we can talk about a little bit later, some of the issues today. Mm-hmm. But I had learned one very, very valuable lesson as a salesman with Xerox. And that is, you don't sell anything by telling people what they need or what they want. You sell things by sitting and listening and asking questions as to their issues, some of their needs, and you help to fulfill those needs.
Yep.
In other words, to deliver the capabilities of your product, whether it's a sponsorship or whatever, to meet the needs of the client. And that was a lesson that has never changed right through my entire life. And the second lesson is opportunities come to us all.
Yeah.
It's what you do with those opportunities that matter. And I was driving down the A20 in Kent one day, wanting to be a racing driver. I'd seen a Formula Ford car for sale. And I saw a big sign on the side of the road, new nightclub opening in the Maidstone area in May. And I thought, wow, an opportunity. So I went back, I did some research, and I found that this nightclub, which was opening, were going to have a businessman's lunch. In other words, they wanted to invite local businesses along in the aim of selling subscription memberships.
Yep.
And that's where my plan started. What was it? Blackadder's assistant said, Baldrick, a cunning plan.
Yeah, here we go, light bulb moment.
So what I did, I found out the time of the business lunch. I found out the name of the owner of the club. And I went to the man who owned the race car that I wanted to buy and asked me if I could borrow it for a day.
Yeah.
Not to race it, not to drive it even, but to have it on the trailer and tow it behind my car to an event. I parked the car in the middle of the car park at Victoria's on the day of the big business lunch, walked into reception, asked if I could see the owner of the club. And this guy came out, and I'm not joking, he must have been 6'8" if he was tall, big Yugoslavian guy.
Yeah.
And he came out, and there were more F words I heard in the first 30 seconds of why I should move my car from the car park with the trailer and the racing car on it.
Brilliant.
And I said, yeah, just I'd like to talk to you about how I can help you sell more subscriptions. Take a look out of the window. And he looked out of the window, and people were getting out of their cars ready to come to the lunch, but stopping off and having a good gawk at the racing car.
Brilliant.
And I said to him the magic words, can you imagine if that car were in the main shopping centre in Maidstone on a Saturday morning with a sales promotional person selling memberships to the nightclub, and then the same thing happening at Brands Hatch at the races when I go, can you imagine how many subscriptions we might be able to sell for you? And I found that I got a sponsorship deal.
Genius. That's absolutely genius. And it because I tell you what, it's like something I'm always coming up against with drivers is you do teach them strategies. Now that's a crazy but amazing strategy, and it's something that was you just have to go all in for. But they're so a lot of the times they don't take these actions. But that was a pure case of you getting out there, thinking outside the box, and it not just being an idea, but actually going to do it. And having the balls to actually go and do it, which is actually that's where it comes from. And you would never have done it otherwise if you never got that sponsorship. If you just sent a proposal to him, it wouldn't have washed.
One of the things, Enzo, that I talk to a lot of audiences in sport. I've been a lecturer for the World Academy of Sport, training people in all manner, World Rugby, International Cricket Council, and so forth. And motor racing, I did a lot of work with Porsche, with their young drivers, with Ford and the BRDC.
Yeah.
And I said, the thing you've got to remember with motor race, with sponsorship, is that it's about, I have two very large ears, you might have noticed. Those are the most important sales tools you can take with you to any meeting.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to sit and ask a guy, ask a lady, what is it about in your business that's stopping you sell more products or services?
Yep.
Because the one thing that never changes in business, how they do business changes with the internet, social media, and all these things. But at the end of the day, they have to sell more products,
yep,
more
yep,
services to survive. And if you can help them or suggest ways that you can help them, there is usually a conversation to be had.
Yep.
And that is the key. And it took me right through Formula One. And we'll talk a little bit later maybe about one or two of the big deals that I bought into Formula One companies. Nothing changed.
Yeah.
It's still comprised sitting listening to what that business is doing, some of the issues it faces, and how can we help them achieve that? And to do that, you've got to have two things. Number one, you've got to listen, ask the right questions, and record the answers in your head, not just forget them.
Yep.
And secondly, you've got to know your product, the property that you're selling, inside out. So you know all the capabilities, not just brand awareness, hospitality, and PR, which are the usual three that most sponsorship are based on. You've got to know everything, and you've got to be imaginative, innovative, and most of all, enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Somebody once told me there's only one thing more contagious than enthusiasm, and that's a total lack of it.
Yeah, it really is. And you see it even on, let's put it in proper layman terms here, when you're watching something like Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, they'll get this entrepreneur or want-to-be entrepreneur will get there and sell their and pitch their product. And quite often, the product is, it's okay. It's not too bad. But the investor sat there thinking, I want to invest in this person. Because you can see they're switched on. You can see they're really providing a product, or they've got ideas that this may not be the one, but the next one might be. I want to employ that person. And it doesn't change with sponsorship, does it? It's Peter everything Jones, you're selling, really.
Yeah. It's a very, very true comment there, that you hear that so often.
Yeah.
I want to invest in you. And that's what a business is doing.
Yeah.
Sponsorship is an investment. There has to be a return on that investment, or else they're not going to bother. Why
simple.
Would they?
Simple
and,
as
and
that.
And the other thing that they tend to ask a lot of companies, and it's not a trick question, that man or woman sitting behind that desk is thinking, what could I spend the money that they're asking for the sponsorship for? What else could I spend it better on in my company?
Yep.
And if you can't answer that question, you shouldn't be there.
Yeah, it's got to be valuable. And he or she is employed to actually look for these. So she or he says, right, we're going to spend 100 grand on this race car, compared to 100 grand on Facebook advertising, where you can target people with only blonde hair, or you can target, and you're selling something for blonde hair, you can target only people that have visited your website in the last 5 years. Only they get to see that they came onto your website, they didn't purchase, but they just came on. Bam, the cookie has got you. And it only goes to them people. And that's target audience. And they'd spend probably £50 or $50 a day on that. And they would get customers.
Yeah.
So this is what we're up against now. So you've got to make it so the price has got to match what you're offering as well. Not, I'm going to give you this great stuff. And because the drive is $500,000, it's just going to cost you $500,000. It's like, no, the price tag does not match the benefit, the service or whatever you're providing now. And they know that now. You can't say, we're going to offer you 10 grand's worth of PR, or even the clients that we're going to bring, you're probably only going to get 10 grand's worth. But I want 50 grand for that privilege. They'll just throw you out the door.
Yeah. Now, that's true. And that is still the case. Even when I was selling in Formula One, the big difference when I'm sitting in front of a major global corporation selling a multi-million pound sponsorship deal.
Yeah.
The difference is that I've got a lot more to offer, a lot more capabilities.
Yeah.
The problem, and this is where I feel for youngsters today, the problem at the junior end of racing, where you're looking at Formula 4, for example, it is so difficult to give and equate the value that gives you to the sum of money that it costs to do it.
Yeah.
You know, £300,000 is ridiculous. And yes, there is television coverage, but I analyze all the hundreds, you know, literally over 100 deals that I've done in my life in sponsorship. Not once was a deal based purely on brand awareness or hospitality or PR. It was based on measurable, sustainable business development reasons.
Yeah.
And if you can't offer that, then really you should not be taking up a businessman's time by going to him with a package just saying, we'll stick stickers on a car.
Yep.
Hopefully a few people at the track will watch it. We might get a coverage in Autosport magazine.
No chance. And they've got to prove it to their board of directors, like pretty much what you just said before. It's not just them. And have you found that it helps if by pure coincidence, the CEO or whoever you're talking to just loves motorsport? They kind of want it to make sense. Does that ever work like that?
I find that's the biggest disadvantage.
Oh, is it really?
Can I give you an example of that in Formula One?
Go on.
I approached a company that every single Formula One team were approaching year in, year out.
Yeah.
And that company was Gillette. And it was an obvious target for Formula One teams. And I sat in on the back of a presentation that the Benetton Formula One team were doing before I actually joined them. And I was appalled at what I found. It was the most boring presentation. It was based on brand awareness, hospitality, and PR.
Yep.
The European marketing director of Gillette I stayed behind afterwards and I met him and just chatted. And I said, you look bored out of your mind. He said, Brian, every year, all the Formula One teams knock on the door of the Gillette head office in London. Every year, we tell them, we don't need more brand awareness. Gillette has all the brand awareness it does.
Yeah.
I made another meeting to go back and talk to him about what does matter to Gillette. He told me, and I was able to build a program around that, delivering exactly what they needed, and got the deal. The strange thing, though, to bring it to the point you made, when I went back for that second meeting, the president of the Gillette Shaving Division of Europe, a very nice guy called Alan Both, mm-hmm. was sitting in the meeting. And he said to me, his exact words, Brian, this is going to be a very difficult meeting for you because I love Formula One. I'm passionate about Formula One, but I do not want anyone in the Gillette Corporation worldwide pointing fingers at the deal to go into Formula One with Gillette, sponsorship with Benetton, pointing it and say they did it because it was the chairman's toy.
Yeah.
The reason I have to convince my fellow directors of this have got to be better than you've ever done before.
Yeah, I'd love it to work because I love F1, but please make it so obvious that, yeah, it's not me. That's interesting. That's really interesting because that's a different look at them liking it, because I always thought and I've found that actually if they kind of like the sport, they want to, but that's more of a smaller company. If he's the owner, screw what everyone else thinks.
Yeah,
but if it's in an organization for big money like F1, yeah, I can see that. So that's really cool that you said that.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the F1 sponsorship deals, because FedEx is obviously one that stands out in my memory from yourself, but there could be more.
Well, FedEx was a classic example of what I've been talking about. You've got to go back in time, and a lot of your viewers probably weren't around at that time, but back in the mid-1990s, tobacco was in its final stages as a major sponsor in motorsport, in sport generally, but particularly in Formula One. I was just an agent at that time. I wasn't working for Benetton, but we got the agreement that I could do deals for them if I could. And I looked and saw that there was not a courier company, logistics company as they're called now, none of the DHL, UPS or any of that crowd in Formula One. And I thought, well, that's a bit odd. So I did my homework and approached six companies. I target by industry, which is something, a little tip. Targeting by industry sector is very good because you learn a lot about the sector, who's doing what, people on the move, who runs it, what the competition are doing, yep. and it helps you put a convincing case together. Yep. So I made contact with FedEx in Memphis. What I found was that in these big global organizations, you need to find a champion, somebody who will help you, take you through. It's a very, very tough job getting to the top.
Yeah.
And what I found eventually was that the one thing that FedEx, like any other company, are interested in is increasing their market share. I did a lot of research and I sent a very persuasive email to the president of the FedEx Europe, and he was my champion.
Yeah.
And I showed him how I could help him in a measurable way increase their market share in the business that not only the Benetton group did, but the other 42 companies who were partners or sponsors of the Benetton team,
yep.
ranging from tires, oil, fuel, suppliers. And I showed them how we could increase that business. And that got me a meeting with the president of the shaving division of Europe, went over to Memphis, but I'd also approached another company. Mm-hmm. I won't mention names because it wouldn't be right. But yep. they were the main target competitor to FedEx.
Yeah.
I had a deal on the table from both companies in the end. It was a multi-million groundbreaking deal because they had the potential to take over from tobacco as title sponsor.
Gotcha.
And the thing that we eventually had the pleasure of saying to them, well, look, we've got two deals on the table, identical offerings. What are you going to do? Yep. And FedEx said, we'll come on midway through this season. Their competitors weren't allowed to do that because of their legislation. So we did the deal with FedEx, and they came on at the British Grand Prix, Silverstone, in the middle of the year, at July. John Lacy and Gerhard Berger were driving. They launched the car, and I walked away with a multi-million pound sponsorship deal. I couldn't believe it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it was just as exciting as that first one I did at Victoria's nightclub all those years ago.
And you told me once that it started off like the subject title or the very first sentence of the email was what sold it. It just basically sang to them instead of saying, yeah, I'm a driver, which you weren't at that point. But what a lot of drivers do is, I'm a driver and I've got a dream of getting to F1. It was, how did you load it? How was it worded? Can you remember?
Yes, I can. I started off by saying, last year, the Benetton group of companies that comprise, and I listed their various groups, spent an estimated, and I told them the amount of money, on freight and courier business.
Yep.
I want to talk to you as to how we can increase that share of the market for you.
Perfect. Oh, that's interesting.
And it got me a meeting.
Yep.
The meeting, you don't go in and sit there and have a big spiel. You get in there, you ask questions, and my favorite words in a meeting, what if? Yeah. What if you had a fantastic platform for building a sales incentive program for your sales force?
Yeah.
What if we could get you premier spots in the major supermarket, in the aisles, merchandising opportunities? What if? And eventually, they sell you on the idea.
Mm-hmm.
They come back to you because they're saying, well, what we could do this, that, and the other. And before you know it, they're infusing you as to why they should do it. And there's no better feeling than walking out thinking, I haven't sold a sponsorship. He's bought a sponsorship from me. And there's a huge difference.
That's nice. And was it successful, the relationship?
The relationship was a strange one. The first year, I went every month over to Brussels to have lunch with the sales director of FedEx Europe to make sure that they were happy. Because another tip, so many drivers sign a deal, and the next time the sponsor sees them is when it's renewal time, and they wonder why it's all gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Every month, I would sit with the guy, the sales director, and say, you know, any tweaks, anything we should be doing that's not working for you? Do you want to change anything?
Yeah.
And gradually, after about a year, I got a few wind of the fact that there were some issues. They weren't happy with the meetings that had been promised to them with some of the decision makers throughout the Benetton group. I spoke to the new CEO and I told him, and he said, they're too demanding for their own good, which didn't really help matters.
Okay.
I reminded him that FedEx could take over as title sponsor, and now tobacco was gone. They are going to be more demanding because tobacco just wanted brand awareness.
Yep.
And eventually they pulled out after 2 years of the 3-year deal. Went to Ferrari Formula One, increased the spend from 15 million to 24 million, and got Michael Schumacher in his first world championship year.
Oh, nice story. But still, that's a few lessons there. Like you say, you've got to maintain the relationship. Even if it's an investor that's given you some money because he's investing in you as a driver, which is obviously another thing that happens now, the kids are not picking up the phone to say, how you doing? This was my last race. This is how it went. And it's, they'd feel like, oh, I can't call now because it's probably not the right time. It's like, just call them. You've got to be in their mind because, you know, it's not just to keep the relations, but it's also, if you're a backer, things change. You start to reevaluate if you want to carry on putting money in there. So you have to keep that relationship primed, really, don't you? As well as you're there to offer a service.
Well, one of the most amazing characters I met in my career of training drivers, he was on a BRDC course, was a guy called Dino Zamparelli. You know Dino?
Yeah, know him very well. Yeah.
Dino was one of the few people who sat on one of my training courses and really not just paid attention, but he was in there asking questions, writing, making notes and everything else. And yeah, without my help, I just gave him a little bit of guidance and mentoring from time to time.
Yep.
He pulled in the deals to do GP3, £1.5 million.
He did.
You know, he said to me many times, he said, Brian, the lesson I learned from you is that at the weekend, I wear a motor racing helmet. On a Monday morning, I put my business hat on. And for the rest of the week, I'm a businessman. I have got to deliver a business return for my partners, whether they're in it for £50 or £5,000.
Yep.
They have their return. And he works his butt off during the week. And that's the key to it. It's not sitting in a race car simulator for the whole week.
Yep.
It is about balancing and getting out there and delivering and giving your sponsor more than they expect.
Same with every business, giving the customers. And it's I call it race entrepreneur. It's like one word. Yeah. That's exactly what you are. And Dina really impressed me. And it was, again, through his just every single day bashing the phones, calling all the companies, local companies in Bristol where he lived, putting them all on his sponsor, on his front hood bonnet, 500 quid a time, something like that. It was a really low entry fee.
Bristol bonnet, he called it.
That's it. And the front of the car was covered in companies. And you're thinking to yourself, if you add them up, there's only about 17 grand. But he was thinking even more. He was thinking, okay, now I've got a network party on my bonnet. I'm going to entertain these people at the end of the year with a car and a nice evening all together networking. And that company can do business with that one, as well as the TV exposure. That's just whatever. But it's just like, I can see what you've created now. And then it'll build each year because people yeah, want more.
And companies will want more for them and put more money in.
Yeah. But amazing. Dino, I was so impressed with him.
Well, the only thing Dino ever asked of me, he rang me one day and he said, Brian, could I come and spend a day with you in your office? Can you help me how I get meetings on the phone?
Yeah.
And he sat with me for the day, and I think we targeted six companies. And if I remember rightly, we got four meetings. And Dino, the few times that I was able to really help him, on every occasion, he said, Brian, I learned so much from watching you operate.
Yeah.
And he worked himself, but you still need some guidance along the way. And that was where I was able to help him. But he picked up on it straight away. He applied the lessons and he didn't need me anymore, which was fantastic. That's the best compliment I could be paid.
I know you've got like books and other material, but you mentor drivers as well, right? Because this is the kind of thing that drivers go, I want to learn that as well. Yeah. Can you teach me? You've got a mentorship course?
Yeah. What I've done is it's a very simple. I help drivers, not train them. There's a big difference between training them and actually mentoring them. I help them develop a strategy and actually base it on things that they've got in the pipeline help them. And I do it on the basis that they buy 5 one-hour sessions at a time. There's no contract. The end of the five sessions, they don't want to do any more. They don't have to. It's an easy, not too expensive way of doing it.
Yeah.
And the results, I'm getting now some really good feedback from the mentoring from people.
I would have loved that. When I was a kid driving, I would have definitely signed up for that because I was just going to like the Birmingham Central Library, a bit like yourself would have in these days. And do you remember the Hollis sponsorship book?
Yes.
I would just go through that. That was like my Bible. I never got anything from it, but it was in my Bible. Like, this company is sponsoring this person or this team and they're spending this much. I loved it. Sponsorship and donations, wasn't it? And I just write to every single one of them. And not knowing that I was doing it completely wrong and just saying, this is me racing, do you fancy a sticker on the car, kind of.
Well, you know, youngsters today looking for sponsorship are very lucky. Yeah. I mean, in my day, if you wanted any information, I had to go to the reference library and take out something called a Kelly's directory.
Okay.
You had to sit down and write it all because they wouldn't let you take the directory out of the library.
That's it.
Today, you've got the internet. You can sit on a beach in Spain and do your research. I find that the easier it gets to do the research, the less people are doing research.
It's amazing.
I don't understand.
You can read their mind. You can read the company's mind now by seeing what they're putting up on their Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything page. And you can see what they're, if you decode, why would they put that advert out? Like, I can see they're just after subscriptions or they've got a new product coming out. Oh my God, it's much easier now.
Well, the one thing that I get asked more than anything else on courses or training programs or mentoring, how do you get meetings?
Yeah, that's big.
And that right now, and maybe it's a good time just to very briefly touch on it, the world has changed. Mm-hmm. If anybody now watching this thinks that they can apply the same sponsorship acquisition techniques to motorsport as they did before the virus, they've got a big shock coming.
Yeah.
Because the one big word today that is going to be the be-all and end-all of it is perception. In other words, companies now are saying, yes, maybe we can afford to sponsor a British touring car team or a Formula 3 team or a whatever team.
Yeah.
But can we afford to be seen to be sponsoring motor racing teams? In other words, aren't there more important things in the world right now than motor racing?
Yeah.
Yes, there are. And at the end of the day, the most important is selling more products or services. So don't think that they won't use motor racing. But if you just go in there and give them and say, here's a motor racing program, it will help you sell more products, and you don't give them the ammunition to stand up in front of their board of directors, yep. their shareholders, their staff very often, the trade press, their customers, mm-hmm. and answer the question, this is why we're going motor racing, not because we just like racing. It's because it helps maybe in terms of education and training. We're doing a scholarship program to a university, motorsport engineering linked to it. Yep. We're doing it because it's a sales incentive program for our sales force. We're doing it because it helps staff motivation, team building. You've got to give them a very good reason to help them sell it internally. If you don't, they won't bother.
That's right. And I work with WH Sports, and they're a sports agency. They're quite new, you know, 10 years old, really switched on guys. I swear by them, but they've sold sponsorship in World Endurance and F1, but most of their success is selling football space t-shirts. It could be the on the sleeve, it could be on the chest, even the training tops, you know, you get sponsors just for them. And because it's more bang for your buck, and rugby as well, they've found that. Have you found other sports a lot easier? I mean, I think you mentioned Speedway once. I'm not sure.
I was head of marketing for Bath Rugby. I don't know if you know that.
No, I do now.
Well, when Benetton sold out in 2001 to Renault, I had a break and I was appointed. I decided to see if I could sell sponsorship in another sport. And I joined Bath Rugby and became their head of marketing. And guess what? It worked. What I did worked because I bought Virgin Mobile, and it was a huge sponsor, and Northgate Information Systems, the big IT organization.
Okay.
I found it very, very different, different approach in one way, in as much that the sort of companies that you go to for rugby are very different to what you go for probably for motor racing. But the same thing applied. Mm-hmm. Sit down with them and ask them, what are the issues that are stopping you selling more of your products and services?
You're there.
And then you're fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did it. I've done it in Speedway, Formula One powerboat racing.
Mm-hmm.
What else have I done it in? Oh, in charity sector. I mean, the charity sector is always looking for funding.
Yeah.
There was a charity in Southampton called the Jubilee Sailing Trust. Big, big charity. They have two tall sailing ships taking physically disabled people on holidays in these beautiful old ships, and they've adapted them to so that they can you can even get a wheelchair up into the rigging.
They've
got navigation for blind people. It's extraordinary.
Brilliant.
And they were battling to get funding, and I sat with them. I met their chair lady at a meeting, and she was telling me, and she said, we're really struggling. And I said, which budgets are you approaching the companies with? And she said, well, the donations, you know, causes. And I said, what about marketing budgets? She said, well, I wouldn't give donations from there. I said, no, but if you go and look at the marketing budget, it's always much bigger.
Yeah.
So I worked as a consultant with them, helped them for a year, and we raised £333,000 in sponsorship for them through sponsorship, where you offer a commercial return.
Yeah. Makes
sense. The problem in motorsport, so many people in a way are doing what they had been doing, going out there and saying, I'm a racing driver. I want to go to Formula One. I'm very, very good. I haven't got any budget. You probably have. You can afford it. So put a sticker on the car. I'll give you some tickets. Give me some money and I'll get on my way on my career. Thank
you. It's all one way. Yeah, hardly ever comes off that one. So
it sounds so easy, doesn't it?
And, it does. It does.
It's not. It is hard work. And I really feel for people out there now.
Yeah, and for kids that have got, or not just kids, but drivers that are going for like a small championship that's not on TV, it's got a bit of social media because the championship do, and you've got your own social media. So there is some kind of outreach and eyeballs on you, but not that much value. The championship's probably 40K, should we say, to compete in, which in England, that's possible. In America, you can't really race for that much. It's a lot different there. But in England and Europe, you can race on a budget. Now, if those people want to start to get into sponsorship and just get a little bit here and there, what would be your word of advice for them? Because they might think, I can't do all this and go to a big company for Formula Ford pre-90.
Very, very simple. Yeah. And I've got a case study very quickly. I'll show them as well. But what you've got to do, you've got to forget the motor racing at the weekend. Totally don't involve that at all in your plans. You've got to say to them, by 5:30 on the Friday night, before I race on the weekend, you will have got your value for money.
Yeah.
The race weekend, treat it as that's the weekend where we have fun. We can control nothing. I can't control whether I win, lose, come off the track, get taken out on the first corner. So why build a program around that? What I can do, I can build a program, though, that will help you as a company meet some of the needs. You mentioned to me, for example, you've got a small sales force within a 50-mile radius. You've got 10 sales guys who are out there selling advertising for the local newspaper or whatever it is.
Yeah.
What we can do, let's build a program where we give them some incentives. They come and spend a day at the track and drive the car. The top salesman each month gets a day at the races with their wives, girlfriends, family, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Let's build programs that don't rely on the race weekend. Let's guarantee you, guarantee media, go to the local radio station, go to your local newspaper and say, I will write an article about tips for road drivers from my racing career, how to anticipate better, how to be a smoother driver. Mm-hmm. I won't charge you newspaper for it, but I want you to mention my sponsors' names. Yep. Give them, go to your local radio station. Don't say to the company, you go. Mm-hmm. You go to the radio station and say, can I do a program on a Saturday morning within your motoring show and talk about how to get sponsorship?
Yep.
Build programs between Monday and Friday and then treat race weekend as the bonus, the fun and everything else.
Yep.
And that is a tip I learned a long time ago and it's worked for me many, many times.
Yeah, and a lot of people, yeah, they apply that can be perfect, but also they're just lots of little sponsors giving a little bit. I've noticed worked well for me when I was racing at that level.
That's a great way. That's a great way.
And you got loads, and it's not hard. If you go to your, I told you before, if you go to your tire and exhaust center, which is exactly what I did, they're now going to get my custom where I wasn't before. So they're making money off me. They're probably earning more off me than they're giving because they were just providing tires for the season. And I probably only needed four sets because it was like a 9-round championship. I need about four sets off them. But then it was the local press. They're in there after every single race weekend. It says their name, which is next to nothing. And they used to let me actually write the press release. And they do it word for word. I could say I won when I didn't do that. But, you know, it was literally my word in and I put them there, a nice photo. And it did increase sales, actually, for them. Plus, yeah. I got my family to go there as well. So they're earning money. So this is brilliant. Enzo sent me, which is what I always got people to say. So they were, oh, yeah, brilliant. So it's easy to provide value for a small company and not really ask them for much. And you just hustle your way through that season somehow.
Yeah.
And well, you borrow a trailer and you take it, you mechanic it yourself. Little things like this, you know, what you have to do.
Well, that example I was giving you, my first, the biggest sponsorship deal I did in Formula Ford, and this was going back 1970 something. I want to tell you, your listeners, a very, very true story in a minute about this. But I approached a company called SodaStream. And I found out that SodaStream were in the middle of a management buyout from the Kenwood Food Mixer Group.
Okay.
I found out there were seven different factors that I could help, ranging from creating brand awareness was one of them, product sampling. Any company that deals in drinks or food loves to get people sampling their products.
Yeah.
And if you can provide areas at your track, or you can do things and say, look, we'll put the race car there at a local fair or fete or garden party or whatever it is, or exhibition, whatever, that will attract me. If you can meet those. And that deal I was able to do, there was no television of Formula Ford in those days at all. Mm-hmm. So I had to build it purely on there. The budget then for a season, a championship season, 36 races, was £12,500.
Oh, mate. Not even inflation. There's been a lot of tax added after that nowadays.
The sponsorship that I got was for £27,500.
Ah, lovely. Was it all execution?
It allowed me to take a salary and work full time on being in departmental stores during the week with the car, product sampling, going to all manner of things that I did for them.
That's brilliant.
And there was no television coverage. And if I'd have based it on number of people watching it, I'd have got nothing. But I didn't. If you base it on helping them build a business and create sales, it sounds easy. I know it isn't easy. It's very difficult.
That's how simple it is, though. It's not easy, but it's simple, the process.
That's why I'm mentoring, you know, what I've been doing is working. I'm getting lovely feedback from people because they said, crikey, yeah, I don't mind putting the hours in, but I didn't. I was doing it in totally the wrong way. And that's what Dino said to me. He said, Brian, I can see now why I'm not getting the deals or the meetings. I've been working hard, but putting it all in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Now he turned it around and suddenly Dino was out there doing deals.
Brilliant. That's really good. So that's it. You just got to put the work in, really. What do you see is like the main one or two mistakes that drivers do if we haven't covered it? I think it'll be proposal and approach based, but what do you think? Your common mistakes that drivers make?
Sending out sponsorship proposals before you've had a meeting with the company.
Yeah.
A proposal begs the question, yes or no. I'm proposing that you sponsor my racing this year. And it asks the question, do you want to do it or don't you want to do it effectively? How can you do that when you've never met with them? So what I say to drivers, don't send out proposals. Send out a prospectus. A prospectus that is not about you. People aren't really interested, as long as you're not a complete clown, in how many laps you've done, how many lap records you hold, or all this stuff.
Yep.
What they're interested in is, what can this guy do for my business?
Yep.
And you show, and you've got to spend a lot of time understanding the capabilities of your sponsorship property. What can this do for a company, ranging from platform for sales, marketing, sales incentives, a great display car for exhibitions, all these things. Match all those up and put them in a perspective. Then you go to your first meeting and you sit and mentally ask the question, what are the issues facing your company?
Yep.
And in your head, tick off the things in that capability list that match what he's looking for. You might end up with just three things.
Mm-hmm.
Go away. Then you deliver a bespoke proposal based on what the three important things are to that company.
Yep.
And you can walk into his office for the second meeting and say, as you told me last week, the three things that are important to you are product sampling, sales incentive program, and exhibition display. Yeah. This is my proposal. This is what we'll do. This is the cost of the proposal. When can we start?
Perfect. I mean, kids can do this now. They can literally go to a company, say, and not selling a thing. I am just a student of business, and I want to know the current challenges that companies are facing. I just need 2 minutes of your time. And they're just writing down all these things that the company is struggling with. And they're getting to know how to talk to CEOs or people in charge of that division, and it would just get them. They'd be like, right, I know exactly what to. They just become a student of business, but on the go. I'm doing a blog on companies post COVID or during COVID, if it never stops. And then I think they would just tick the boxes, like you say, and come up with something like, I know what to offer companies now.
Yeah. Because at the end of it all, it is not about what you want for your racing. It is about what your racing can do for a company.
Yeah.
And that is the key. It the more you do it, the easier it gets.
And that just reminded me now quickly, 12 grand on Formula Ford. What do you think about the prices now then? Because even Formula Ford's probably six figures.
I think it proper. Is an absolute disgrace.
Yeah,
I've been very vocal on social media. I think the spiraling costs of single-seater racing in Britain have been allowed to go without any idea or any thought of controlling it. It is absurd.
Yeah,
12 cars on the grid at Thruxton for the Formula 4 race I watched, the national championship.
Yeah,
and so many of the drivers I speak to say the same thing. We need a single-seater path to Formula One that is controlled, that is open, and not what's happening today. It's becoming an elitist path. You've got Formula One, which has got so many rich kids in it with rich fathers.
Yeah.
It's doing the sport no good at all. And if you don't believe that's important, go to the sponsors and they will tell you, we do not want to sponsor elite sports. We do not want to be seen at this time to be favoring, you know, non-diverse, very rich kids whose fathers are multimillionaires.
Makes sense.
Not the image we want.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. So it is out of control. There's nothing we can do about it apart from start a revolution because it's all controlled.
I've put a lot of pressure on MSA to do it, to try and, but it is very difficult.
It is. So with them guys, there is all other championships, and now you see people going left, right, career changing, GTs this week, then prototypes next year. So it's like as a driver, you've got to be really versatile and jump in anything you can and not be too precious about it. Go on. What was that?
Historic Formula Ford's a great championship to go in. You know, for a third of what you'll pay to go racing in, less than a third in Formula Four, you'll get close single-seater racing, exciting racing. You'll learn racecraft, mechanical grip.
Yeah.
And I'll leave you all with a little statistic which will shock you. During the seasons that I raced in the National Formula Four Championship in Britain, which were 1975 through to 78. 15 of the drivers I raced with, including Nigel Mansell, Derek Warwick, Derek Daly, Jim Weaver, went on to race in Formula One.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? Close, exciting single-seater racing at a cheap level produces world champions.
Yeah, no one will disagree. No one will disagree with that. It's true. It's not you just paying your way to the team that's got the quickest car. And just piggybacking off that, it's different. I mean, that's going to be so hard to change. But if we can kind of do something in the grassroots at least, so these drivers can start to get traction, start to get spotted by people who can pay for them, even programs, you know, there's plenty of driver programs out there, then that's a good start. I think it'll be to change F2, F3, that big route, and F4 is so difficult because it's in, you know what I mean? That's hard to do anything. But if we can just get them started, that's why I say to people, just race anything. MX5s cost 20 grand. But at least you're out there. You'll be picking up small sponsors. You'll be learning how to get sponsors. And you're on the track. You're not in your bedroom. Anyone can raise 20K. Even if you have to save up for 5-6 years, you can do it. And then you start your motorsport journey. So there's no reason why not.
Well, the other thing it needs doing is, I was watching the British Touring Car Championship on television the other day. And the commentators were talking, some of the driving in the junior formulas is getting very bad. It's teaching. And again, I think a lot of it is because there's no respect. You know, if you've got a parents or family who are paying for all the damage, you don't worry.
Yeah.
Some of the driving habits are way, way off kilter.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be dealt with before somebody has a very bad accident and gets hurt.
Yeah, it just seems like a computer game, and the car is easy to drive now compared to before. And yeah, you're right. But that's another issue. Okay, I'm just going through my questions people have asked. The small championships was a big one, popular. Selling stuff in other sports is possible as well if you want to become a broker, if that's what you're going for. How do you contact a company? I mean, you briefly said that Dino came and watched you how you do it, but you pick up the phone and call them up and call the helpline, or do you do research, or just talk us through how you'd do it if you needed to do it this week?
Well, unfortunately, it's changed a lot in the light of what's happening at the moment.
Yep.
You know, picking up the phone to companies today is so difficult because literally the switchboards tell you our switchboard is closed. If you know the mobile phone number of the people, I use LinkedIn as a way of getting to companies. If you use LinkedIn, you'll find invariably most companies now, their staff are onto LinkedIn. So what you've got to learn, and this is not easy to do, but it doesn't involve anything to do with motor racing.
Yep.
You've got to learn and improve your written communication skills and your oral communication skills. In other words, the ability to send an email or an online request to somebody to connect with you to talk about a specific business.
Yep.
And that is, you won't learn that on the racetrack. You won't learn it from motor racing people. You'll learn that by doing an online course in writing sales letters or writing persuasive letters. It's the one thing that has helped me tremendously, mm-hmm. the ability to write a persuasive, powerful letter that's not me, me, me.
Yeah.
It's about the person, what you can do for them.
Yeah.
So that is very, very important. Similarly, the ability to get on the phone. I use one particular person in the company I find has their finger on the pulse normally, not at the moment, but normally what goes on. And that is the PA to the CEO of the company. If you can get to a decision maker as opposed to a marketing department in the middle of a company, you get lost in that mire. But if you can get above that and there's somebody there, a champion trying to help you, and they can direct you, the further up the company you can approach them, the easier it is. If you start at the bottom and you can't get in, you can't go above that person's head.
Yeah.
But if you start at the top, and I've always used the PA to the CEO because I ask her for help. Who should I talk to present a business opportunity to your company?
Yep.
Can you help me? Can you help me get a meeting with that person?
Yeah.
And if it goes wrong and you're not getting anywhere, you can go back to her and say, look, that didn't quite work out. Where do you think I went wrong or whatever?
Yeah, she can be honest. She likes to feel important instead of being shouted at by everybody. And she's on your side selling you then?
I've done that in so many companies have I done that.
Yeah.
The PA has actually said to me, thank you for treating me as an intelligent human being instead of a brick wall blocking the door to my boss.
Yeah, it's refreshing. It really is refreshing because you're there as a growth consultant for companies. You're as curious as they are to see if this fits or what you can provide. And I think if you keep it like that and you're just as interested as growing their company as they are, and you've got some exciting solutions within sport, it takes the pressure off you to present. You're there to pick their brains and then just see if it fits. If it doesn't fit, fine. I'm not going to offer you anything, but I'm interested to see if it does. And that puts them at ease as well, if you're like a consultant. But I think if you're like a 16-year-old, that kind of thing's hard. That's when they need to like get yourself or someone else who's more of a business-minded to just help them out. So then they have to sell that to them, obviously. It's a different thing. But I had to go to a PR company to help me because I just wasn't getting anywhere at one point.
Yeah,
and I pretty much promised them, and I don't say anyone should do this, I promised that I would find them a good client in motorsport if they worked for me for free. And because they were local and I was bold enough to say I'm a British champion, when in fact I'd only won one championship and it happened to be in Britain, but I worded it like I'm a British champion. They backed me, they did my proposals for me, my logo, my website, and they helped me look more professional and and trained me how to speak, basically. And I did actually get the touring car team, the Alfa Romeo touring car team in the early 2000s. And they must have earned about 300 grand off that team. And I got a drive with them as well, actually, ironically enough. So it all tied in. But it was like, I need help from certain people that have got the expertise because I'm just getting told to go away. What sponsorship deal can I do with that person, that fitness trainer, whoever it is you need help off, business to business, not sponsorship, to help it go through. And then you've got like a team of people around you. And I learned that off Andy Prio. He came from Jersey, just lived in a caravan for ages in the back of, I think it was Speed Sports workshop at Silverstone. He just lived there while he chased his dream. And he had lawyers, he had PR companies, marketing agencies, all helping him, sort of pro bono or just a relationship. And that force came together and they did really well together. And I love that.
Even going back, when I started an organization called the Motorsport Industry Association, the MIA, which I started in 1994.
Remember that? Yeah.
I didn't have any money to start that. So I went to many companies. I went to Accenture, I went to Hewlett Packard, I went to lawyers, I went to accountants, and they all came on board with a little bit of help and advice and practical support to make that off the ground. And what it does, it gives you a huge stamp of credibility. If companies say, you know, who are your legal people that are going to do the contracts for this sponsorship? Who are your accountants? Who are your press agency?
Yeah.
And you've got those in place. It shows that, yes, you understand the world of business. That's another way of doing things.
Okay, good. So I think we've told people enough. Is there anything you want to leave us with? Like one word of advice or a leaving comment or something to remind us of or anything you're offering? Because you've said you're offering mentors as well, mentorship. So is there anything Is there anything we could offer them for free, like a freebie?
A little bit of humor. A little bit of humor on there. I recently have sent out social media to a lot of companies who are making it very difficult for people to contact them.
Yeah.
And I attach a cartoon with it. And the cartoon goes back to 1066 and the Battle of Hastings.
Yep.
And the cartoon is of King Harold sitting in his tent the night before the Battle of Hastings against William the Conqueror. And Harold is sharpening his sword. And a page boy comes in and taps him on the shoulder and said, "Sire, sire, there is a merchant outside wants to talk to you." And Harold said, "I'm too busy fighting a battle to talk to any merchant. Tell him to go away." So the page boy goes back to the merchant and said, "I'm sorry, but these machine guns that you've invented, he's not interested."
Yeah.
And I thought that shows very often the mental attitude of the business world.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that, you've got to find a way of getting that machine gun in front of Harold.
And just like the race car to the nightclub.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for doing this for us. I'm sure everyone's going to find it really valuable and take certain nuggets from it and run with it, hopefully.
Well, maybe you and I should work together more. And I think what you're doing is fantastic with the drivers as well. And there isn't a lot of help really out there. There are a lot of people who charge a lot of money to become driver managers. But when you ask them, do you help them get money? Do you help them find sponsorship? The answer is no. That's not my job.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're doing a fantastic job, Enzo, and keep it up. And
thanks, buddy.
Any help, be delighted.
Yeah, let's keep it going. Let's keep providing some value. Leave a legacy. Thank you again, and we'll see you soon.